And I really, really want to get to our Alice, because I know that this is not, that this, these exercises, quote unquote, are still being done to children today. That this is, in fact, how they create that mindless submission of the will, quote unquote, of children to authority, to power, to rule, to the state. It has been extremely effective for them. There is, I am absolutely certain, this continues to this day. I'm so grateful to Alice Miller for capturing and discussing this reality, which has been submerged, hidden for too long. Quote from a, we are reading Poisonous Pedagogy in Alice Miller's For Your Own Good. Quote from a very poisonous pedagogue. Quote, the infant is fond of something he is playing with that amuses him. Look at him kindly, then smilingly and very calmly take it from him with a light air. Replace it immediately without making him wait long with another toy and pastime. And my comment, let's think about, please, because I know a lot of folk read these exercises, this advice, and vibe with it a bit. Because under the conditions of a class system, the atomization we're all stuck in, the inability to express our communal nature, the inability to make a world that's full and big, with the earth fully present, moment to moment in our lives, with trees and beauty all around us, with our lives in our own possession again, time, our lives are our own, that we need to think about, that when we do not have, when we are not the ones creating the conditions for our lives, for our children, it sets us up to be in conflict with our children. And that's what we're seeing in reading these poisonous pedagogues, is that they are reflective of a stance of opposition against their children, and that this is in fact what the system does. It pits us against our children. So this is yet another reason, ethical, moral, whatever you want to call it, reason for starting these critical discussions. Do we want our children to be free? Do we want to get on the same side with them? Do we want to stop turning them into servants of an ignoble project? So what would a world design be if children were our highest priority? They show us with their smiles. Let's start paying attention. Let's welcome back the rule of laughter. It is important for us to discuss the ways in which the structure of class is abusive, and that the child experiences this abusiveness most intensely of all of us. Continuing with the poisoned pedagogue, he will then forget the first object and eagerly accept the second. Frequent and early repetition of this procedure will prove that the child is not so intractable as he is accused of being, and as he would have been had he not been sensibly trained. He is not so likely to turn out to be headstrong with a familiar person who has won his confidence by means of love, play, and tender supervision. Initially, a child does not become agitated and refractory because something has been taken away from him or because his will has been thwarted, but because he doesn't want to give up his amusement and endure boredom. The new diversion he is offered induces him to relinquish the one he had so strongly desired before. If he should show displeasure when an object he covets is withdrawn, should also cry and scream, then pay no heed, nor seek to pacify the child by caressing him or by returning the object. Rather, continue your efforts to divert his attention to a new pastime. And that's from F.S. Bach, A Manual of the Art of Pedagogy for the Use of Christian Parents and Future Teachers of the Young. That's from 1789. And Alice comments on this. This advice reminds me of one of my patients who was successfully conditioned at a very early age not to heed his hunger pangs. His attention was diverted from his hunger solely by demonstrations of affection, quote unquote, a complicated set of compulsive symptoms concealing his deep feelings of insecurity later resulted from this early training. Naturally, this attempt to divert his attention was only one of many ways used to stifle his vitality. Facial expressions and tone of voice are very popular and often unconsciously used methods too. And then she cites this as her illustration from this poisoned pedagogue, quote, a very fine and worthy position is assumed by silent punishment or silent reproof, which expresses itself by a look or an appropriate gesture. Boy, have I seen that one used. Well, I guess we all have, huh? Silence often has more force than many words, and the eye more force than the mouth. It has been correctly pointed out that man uses his gaze to tame wild beasts. Should it not therefore be easy for him to restrain all the bad and perverse instincts and compulses of a young mind? If we have nurtured and properly trained our children's sensitivity from the beginning, then a single glance will have more effect than a cane or switch on those children whose senses have not been dulled to gentler influences. The eye discerns, the heart burns should be our preferred motto in punishing. Let us assume that one of our children has told a lie, but we are unable to prove it. When the family is together, oh my goodness, and this is like the Inquisition here we're about to hear. when the family is together at the table or elsewhere, we happen to bring up the subject of people who tell lies, and with a sharp glance at the wrongdoer refer to the shameful, cowardly, and pernicious nature of lying. How about the shameful, cowardly, and pernicious nature of bullying? But they don't want us to think about that. These power guys are nothing if not bullies. Continuing, if he is still otherwise uncorrupted, he will sit there as if on hot coals and will lose his taste for untruthfulness. The silent pedagogical rapport between us and him will grow stronger. The right gestures are also among the silent servants of child rearing. A slight movement of the hand. You see what I mean about them having turned their children into puppets who then work assiduously and joyfully trying to turn us into their puppets. They sure get off on that. As Alice calls it, revenge on us for what was done to them. A slight movement of the hand, shaking of the head, or shrugging of the shoulders can have a greater influence than many words. In addition to silent reproof, we can also use verbal reproof. Here, too, there's not always a need for many high-flown words. C'est le ton qui fait la musique. And this applies to pedagogy as well. Anyone fortunate enough to possess a voice whose tone can convey the most diverse moods and emotions has received from Mother Nature a fortuitous means of meting out punishment. Okay. Wow. What a use for what he is saying is an earth-given gift. Isn't that hideous? For meting out punishment. This can be observed even in very small children. If you have an expressive voice, good news! Good news, you can torture your child even more effectively. Let me show you how. We've learned that they actually love us. Ha ha ha. Another weapon we can use against them. I mean, I should not laugh. This is the source of much oppression, if not all, that we've experienced from class's inception. So, he says, Anyone fortunate? Okay, wait, blah, 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 blah. Expressive voice, you can be better at hurting your child. This can be observed even in very small children. They've noticed, get this, a child's face lights up when we speak to them in a kindly tone. Wow, we can really use this. And their wailing mouths close when father's grave and resonant voice enjoins them to be quiet. And when a certain tone of reproof is used in order to, when a certain tone of reproof is used to order an infant to drink, it will often obediently take the bottle it had pushed away but a short time ago.